On this Saturday night, state of emergency, white nationalist protests turn deadly in Charlottesville, Virginia, when a car slams into the crowd. President Trump condemning what he calls an egregious display of bigotry and calls for unity.
No matter our color, creed, religion, or political party, we are all Americans first.
Border Lifeline, as tensions rise with North Korea, we get a rare glimpse at the crucial trade link with China that keeps North Korea running. Sick bay in space, training astronauts to double as first responders when there's a medical emergency on the mission to Mars. And Close Encounters, the remarkable scenes in the water as swimmers come within inches of a gentle giant. Nightly News begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Jose Diaz-Balart.
Good evening. Terror and death in the streets of Charlottesville, Virginia today as a car plowed into a crowd of protesters, killing at least one and injuring many more. Hours earlier, Virginia's governor declared a state of emergency when fights broke out at a nearby protest site. This historic southern college town has seen 2 days of violent protests focused on race. White nationalists rallying there last night, counter-protesters clashing with them today. Officials say thousands participated as a huge contingent of police and state troopers tried to keep the peace. They did not succeed. NBC's Tom Costello is there with the very latest. Tom.
Jose, good evening. The streets are calm at this very moment, but behind me, police are still working the scene here where the fatal accident occurred. Witnesses saying that this driver came plowing into a crowd of counter-protesters. People went flying in every direction. We had at least one fatality here. A short time ago, they did arrest a suspect in this, but we don't know his identity. The police chief moments ago said that this was, in fact, an intentional act. In the entirety of this incident here in Charlottesville, more than three dozen people injured. This has been a day of heated racist rhetoric and violence. A horrifying scene in Charlottesville as this car plowed into a crowd of people, the driver then backing up and witnesses say dragging at least one person.
It's barreling towards the protesters. I jump out of the way and scream, car.
Three cars involved in the chain reaction crash, killing at least one person. That's when he went right through the crowd. Yeah. Brennan Gilmore and Chris Mahoney took video of the moment of impact. He took aim at the crowd?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very narrow street and he sort of slowed down and then just slammed into them. Very, very hard.
It happened 2 hours after a planned protest billed as Unite the Right was shut down by police at a nearby park. Hundreds of white nationalists, some wearing what appeared to be uniforms, carrying weapons, Confederate flags, and Nazi symbols, clashed with counter-protesters. The rally originally meant to protest the city's decision to remove the statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee, but it quickly turned to chaos.
You will not replace us!
Unite the Right organizer Jason Kessler live-streamed this video.
Look, we're being gassed now. The Charlottesville Police Department is allowing people to come in here, gas us. They won't allow us into the event, even though we had a permit.
If you do not disperse immediately, you will be arrested.
Police stepped in, a massive presence, clearing the demonstrators from the area, declaring it an unlawful assembly. The largest deployment of Virginia State Police in nearly three decades. Tensions began simmering last night when white nationalists carried torches in the city, eerily reminiscent of Nazi Party propaganda events in the 20s and 30s. Today, President Trump responded to the violence.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides.
The mayor of Charlottesville also weighed in, saying he is brokenhearted and urged people to go home. We have another tragic development. A state police helicopter was working all day, hovering above the crowd, watching the developments. It crashed a short time ago. The governor of Virginia tells us that two state troopers died in that crash. So we now have three people dead here in Charlottesville, Virginia, or nearby, and at least three dozen people injured in what may have been the biggest white nationalist attraction or event in decades. Jose?
Tom Costello, thank you very much. From Charlottesville to New Jersey, where President Trump addressed the violence, striking a different tone than we've heard from him in recent days. In a call for unity, the president's message also focused on what he calls a return to law and order. NBC's Kelly O'Donnell with that part of the story.
This was not the celebratory event President Trump had planned. His moment to tout a bill for veterans care, overshadowed by the kind of national emergency that requires a president's voice.
It's been going on for a long time in our country. Not Donald Trump, not Barack Obama. It's been going on for a long, long time.
Referring to today's violence and suggesting he and his predecessor did not spark this fire, the president reached out to Virginia's governor, Democrat Terry McAuliffe.
We agreed that the hate and the division must stop, and must stop right now.
The president used the word bigotry, but did not specifically rebuke or describe racially motivated protesters, some of whom brought weapons to a planned demonstration.
No matter our color, creed, religion, or political party, we are all Americans first.
The president turned to more comfortable terrain by thanking first responders.
I want to salute the great work of the state and local police in Virginia, incredible people.
And he called for calm.
What is vital now is a swift restoration of law and order and the protection of innocent lives.
The racial divide parallels a political one, where some of those at the protest were vocal Trump supporters, aligned with white nationalism like David Duke.
And that's why we voted for Donald Trump, because he said he's going to take our country back, and that's what we got to do.
The president carried on with his planned bill signing, but turned back to Charlottesville.
And everybody wants it to heal, and it will heal.
Although President Trump indicated he would take questions, he did not. He heard the words white nationalist and left the room.
Mr. President, do you want the support of these white nationalist groups who say they support you, Mr. President?
Mr. President,
have you denounced them strongly enough?
And White House officials trying to explain why the president described this as bigotry on many sides. They say he is condemning all of it, but that there was violence from protesters and counter-protesters. Some Republican senators are saying the president must say more to describe this as domestic terrorism and to call out white supremacists. Jose?
Kelly O'Donnell, thank you. Much more on all of this tomorrow morning on Meet the Press. Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster, the president's national security advisor, and Admiral Mike Mullen, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, will be among Chuck Todd's guests. Today's violence in Charlottesville is a stark reminder of our nation's troubled history when it comes to race. NBC's Morgan Radford takes a look at new data showing just how deep issues of race run and where the big divide exists.
Replace us! You will not replace us!
Last night's torchlight protest march by the alt-right in Charlottesville, Virginia, has eerie echoes of the past. Familiar images from an era many Americans thought was behind us. Race, after decades of civil rights marches and historic legislation, even the election of a black president, is still at the center of our national conversation.
Why now? Is this the tipping point?
Yes. America's entering a unique phase of its history.
Nearly three-quarters of American voters say that race relations in the United States are worse now than in the 90s, after the O.J. Simpson verdict and the L.A. riots. When broken down by race, black and white Americans don't see eye to eye. Polls show 42% of black Americans are very dissatisfied by the way blacks are treated, but only 15% of whites share the same view.
The playing field is not fair. It's never been fair. So in the effort to straighten and correct it and make it appear fair, those who've had the advantage now feel disadvantaged because they no longer have the advantage.
Surveys and polls can obscure people's true feelings on the hot topic of race. But experts say how people act may be more revealing of what they actually think.
A Harvard researcher studying Google searches found hidden racism that public surveys might not capture. On Obama's 2008 election night, one in every 100 searches for Obama also included KKK or the N-word. And last year, searches containing racist epithets spiked across the country during President Trump's run for office.
No one's going anywhere. This is who America is. America's got to come to terms with it, that we really are a multiracial society.
One of the most striking things we found when doing research for this piece is that data reveals that we've come to a point in our country where whites see anti-white bias as more prevalent than anti-black bias. Experts on race relations say that this moment, this tension we're seeing will actually pass, but that it might get worse before it gets better, Jose.
Morgan Radford, thank you very much. The crisis in North Korea prompted a phone call last night between President Trump and China's leader, who warned that those involved should avoid remarks and actions that could escalate tensions. Many believe that China, with its strong ties in North Korea, may be key to reining in the regime. To get a better sense of that relationship, we sent NBC's Janice Mackey-Frayer for a rare look at the China-North Korea border.
North Korea's economic lifeline, the bridge connecting it to China. More than three-quarters of trade with the regime passes here. In Dandong, China, trucks load and line streets, then cross to the other side with building supplies, cement, heavy equipment. While severe United Nations sanctions could slash a third of North Korea's export revenue, at the choke point, this single-lane bridge, it's business as usual. It's normal to trade with North Korea, says this business owner. There's nothing to fear. But these days, tension is running high. Deep suspicion of foreign journalists forced us to keep a low profile. As North Korea's biggest ally and trading partner, China's pressure is crucial. Those sanctions alone have never worked.
China's priority always has been stability and maintaining buffer zone in its border. So China does not want to fully implement sanctions or cut off trade completely with North Korea.
In Dandong, North Korea is less a threat than an attraction. Tourists eager to get a glimpse. Boat tours get even closer to look at North Koreans and at how far China has come.
The river separates the two by more than just geography. On the one side, China, the second largest economy, while on the other, North Korea, the most isolated country on Earth.
At most, there is a half mile between China's prosperity and North Korea's poverty. On the map, Dandong, far closer to Pyongyang than Beijing. But the new bridge China built goes nowhere because the regime never built a road to meet it. At the old bridge, trade keeps flowing until the lights go out and the other side goes dark with a dangerous standoff looming. Janice Mackey-Frayer, NBC News, Dandong, China.
Still ahead tonight, how utility companies are putting new pressure on solar users trying to cut into the savings they've enjoyed on their electric bills. Also, just one winner for the Mega Millions jackpot, but auto fever in our country isn't over just yet. It's marketed as a way to save you and your family money on your electric bill, but some utility companies are trying to change the rules on solar technology used on hundreds of thousands of homes across the nation. And it could wind up costing you much more than you expect. NBC's Lucy Kafanoff explains.
Text.
For homeowners Tim Christ and Wendy Hall in Tucson, Arizona.
23.
300 days of sunshine a year made going solar a no-brainer. They shelled out $21,000 for these panels, hoping to offset the triple-digit electric bills that come when temperatures are over 100.
That's huge.
That's a massive increase.
It's an investment with a long-term payoff.
Ideally, based on the size and our calculations, we'll pay zero over the year.
That's because of something called net metering. When the sun is out, rooftop solar panels make more energy than most homes can use. Net metering allows residents to earn credits for the extra power they send to the utility company, which offsets the cost of buying power from the grid at night. Utilities aren't fans of net metering. Every kilowatt generated on a home roof is one less that the power company gets to sell. And now, in six states across the country, power companies are fighting to change the rules.
The reason why you're seeing utility pushback is that their previous monopoly of all energy supply is being threatened.
A proposed rule change in Tucson would see new rooftop solar customers pay as much as $100 a year in additional fees while earning a lot less for the extra power they sell.
The costs of solar power are paid by all of our customers, and rooftop solar customers don't pay their fair share under our current rates.
Their main concern? Net metering doesn't recognize the costs of maintaining the grid that carries power to and from the homes.
Power companies are jumping on a solar bandwagon, too, building huge solar fields like this one. Here, there's nearly 100,000 solar panels. That's enough to keep the lights on for 5,000 Tucson homes all year.
Power companies believe more homeowners benefit when they buy solar power directly from them.
Large community-scale systems like the one we're standing in now, they're more predictable and more reliable.
But Tim Crist wants a choice.
It's disheartening to think about a sunny place like Tucson having less solar. We should have the most solar of anywhere in the U.S.
While it's uncertain who exactly is going to make that choice, it is clear that America's solar landscape is going to change. Lucy Kafanoff, NBC News, Tucson, Arizona.
What if there were a medical emergency in space? We're back in a moment with a look inside a one-of-a-kind simulator getting astronauts ready for Mars. One down and one to go. Last night's Mega Millions jackpot ended with a single winner. That ticket was sold at a barbecue joint just outside Chicago. No one has yet come forward to claim the $393 million prize. That's mucho dinero. For all of us who missed out, there's still one more chance at big money. Tonight's Powerball drawing worth an estimated $356 million. Now to a peek inside a critical part of NASA's preparations for the mission to Mars. As a space agency prepares to send astronauts to the red planet, it's getting them ready to handle a medical emergency millions of miles from the nearest hospital. Our medical correspondent, Dr. John Torres, reports.
When Stephen Robinson was at the International Space Station, a visit to the doctor was out of the question. But if he became sick or injured, they could, in minutes, have a doctor on call.
Real-time communications, very minor delay. So you can basically have a doctor on the radio with you while you're working with the patient.
NASA's new plans for the final frontier have people heading further afield, to Mars, 34 million miles away from Earth. It takes 20 minutes for the call for help to reach Earth.
If you have an emergency, you're not going to wait those minutes. You need to deal with it on board.
That means every member of the crew will be forced to be doctors, working only with the supplies on their ship.
They have limited resources to deal with in that situation to figure out how they might be able to save that person's life.
Feeling indigestion.
NASA and Brigham and Women's Hospital have teamed up to create a first-of-its-kind space simulator to teach astronauts how to deal with medical emergencies, ranging from simple injuries to major events like a heart attack. In one scenario, a pipe on the ship bursts, spewing poisonous gas through the spaceship. The astronauts face a double dilemma. They need to fix their ship and keep their sick crew members alive at the same time. I got the chance to suit up.
14 or 16 gauge engine cap.
In my scenario, a crew member's lung had collapsed. I'm used to that as an emergency physician in the hospital, but not in space.
I mean, this is unbelievable. This is realistic. So the goal is to keep people healthy and complete the mission?
You have to complete the mission.
Yes.
You have no choice.
It's essential.
A mission much more perilous than before. Astronauts will be living in deep space for 3 years. Long enough that the crew will almost certainly face a medical crisis.
Ripley's injured and you
a new world of space medicine. That's one small step towards a giant mission. Dr. John Torres, NBC News, Boston.
When we come back, swimming in the shallows, rare encounters as a whale makes its way right up to shore. We end tonight with some pretty incredible images from the West Coast this week. A gray whale getting close to the shore in Southern California, coming literally within inches of unsuspected swimmers. NBC's Ron Mott has the story.
For a few swimmers, paddleboarders, and beachgoers off the Southern California coast, a whale of a tale. Sharing the open Pacific up close and personal with a friendly beast, some seemingly unaware, thanks to an apparent wrong turn. This juvenile gray whale soaked up the sun and a whole lot of attention in Dana Point Harbor this week. Captain Dave Anderson was out on a whale-watching tour when he hit pay dirt, putting his drone to work, catching a woman who got a tad handsy.
And this lady on the front just dives into the water and swims over to this whale. Everybody was kind of stunned. And then a whole bunch of people kind of helped out, and they actually were able to get the whale out of harbor. It's not something I would normally recommend doing.
Right there!
The Orange County Sheriff's Department also captured the stunning encounter as Good Samaritans tried shooing the young whale back out to sea, eventually getting the hint. But its errant travels were only just beginning. The whale took a couple more detours, first Laguna Beach, then Newport Beach, according to the sheriff. This time of year, gray whales have usually made the 6,000-mile trek from their winter homes near Baja to their summer haunt in the Bering Sea. So whether this whale was simply lost isn't immediately known. Wildlife officials are monitoring its whereabouts and health, saying there's no cause for alarm. Finders keepers it's not, though maybe a handful of weepers who missed out seeing a wayward little whale spouting size and grace, and perhaps thanks for showing the way. Ron Mott, NBC News.
And that's NBC Nightly News for this Saturday. Tomorrow on Nightly News with Kate Snow, a message in music and words from planet Earth to potential extraterrestrials, now repackaged for those of us at home. I'm Jose Diaz-Balart reporting from New York. Thank you for the privilege of your time. Good night.